Time for Magnuson Nature News, a monthly program about the amazing nature inside Magnuson Park. Each month will have a different theme featuring one of the animals or plants that lives here in the park. You'll hear fascinating facts, true nature stories that happened in the park, and the best places inside Magnuson Park to find our featured animal or plant of the month, and much, much more. Magnuson Nature News is brought to you by Magnuson Children's Garden, a great place for the whole family to visit together during any month of the year, and where all our events are free. I'm your host, Emily Bishton, and if you're one of the thousands of kids and parents who've met me over the past 15 years at Magnuson Children's Garden, or while I was working at Magnuson Community Center Nature Programs, the Jane Addams or Sandpoint Elementary School Garden Programs, or from any school who has come to Magnuson for a field trip, I want to give you a special welcome. This is the time of year when the nighttime hours are getting a lot longer than they were during summer. In fact, we have now passed the autumn equinox, when day and night were the same exact length. From then on, the nighttime hours are longer than the daytime hours, until we get all the way into next spring. But that makes fall a great time for a nighttime nature walk in the Magnuson Wetlands. To take a nighttime nature walk, go in the early evening before it's real dark, so that you can see the animals in the wetlands that come out at night, like the beavers and the owls, and maybe even the rabbits. Take a small flashlight with you to shine on the pathway while you walk. But don't shine a big light because you don't want to scare the wildlife. Walk along the trails and listen and look and see what's out there. If you want to go on a night when it's the full moon, October 24th, is the full moon that's called the Hunter's Moon. You never know what you might see on a full moon, because owls like to go hunting on a full moon, and I bet beavers like to go swimming. Our special guest on this month's show knows a lot about both of these animals.
Please welcome Carla Fox.
Great to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So, I know that you have learned a lot about beavers, and you have been super into studying them on your own also. And so I thought I would ask, what are some of the things that you think are the most interesting things about beavers, or things that you like best about them?
So I think my favorite thing about them is probably how the kids go on their own and then go for their own food at a young age.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing, isn't it, that they're really quite young before when they go out and start, you know, foraging for their own food.
Yeah.
Anything else you think is really cool about beavers?
I think the way they do their homes with the wood and just cutting down the trees to make their own home.
Yeah, they can cut down a small tree and then carry it all the way to their lodge. And put it in place.
Yeah.
And have you seen a beaver lodge before?
Yes, I have. When I went to Magnuson, 2 years ago, I think, we were looking for some beavers, and we found them just swimming around in the water. And there they were next to their lodge, just looking around for food, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, they were. And that was a nighttime walk we took, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Day with your friends. And, the young beavers were out and kind of hanging out with each other. It almost looked like a little beaver party, didn't it?
Yes, it did. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was. I was so glad we all got to see those young beaver kits. Also, do you remember on that same walk that one of the grown-up beavers did something to warn all the beavers?
Yes, I do. So I remember that the adult beaver flapped its tail, letting all the beavers know that there was danger or people near.
That's right. It made a very loud sound, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
It was a little bit scary because it came out of nowhere, didn't it? That was a pretty great night.
Yes, it was.
Have you, so is that the last time that you went to the Magnuson Wetlands at night to look for the beavers?
Actually, no. A few weeks later, my mom and I went back, and we went looking for beavers again because we thought it was super cool how we saw the beavers the first time, so we wanted to see them again. So we came back, and there they were, just walking, well, swimming around in the water. It was really cool.
Wow. That's great. It's amazing how kind of fearless they are in a way, even though they're, you know, there's human beings walking on the trails and then there's teams playing sports and making noise pretty nearby, and they just keep doing what they do no matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was walking in the wetlands at nighttime is one of my favorite things to do. And walking in the wetlands in the daytime is pretty cool, too.
Yes, it is. I remember seeing little frogs one time just around the area, and they're just hopping along, and it's so cool how you can just look at them and see all the little details.
Yeah. And you can hear them sometimes when they're peeping at each other in the springtime.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many different types of wildlife in Magnuson Park, including, I know, one of your other favorite creatures, which is the barn owl.
Yes, they are really amazing.
Yeah, they are. And I still have the painting that you made of the barn owl and gave me. I had it in my classroom when I was working for the park, and now I have it at my home.
That's so cool.
I still have it. It's a beautiful painting. You did such a nice job on that.
Thank you.
And have you seen any barn owls at Magnuson Park lately?
Not lately, but I remember a little while ago, we went at night, I think, with one of your walks, and it was just off the side of the wetlands. And there was this area where there was a nest. And so we saw little babies in their nest up in the trees, very high up.
Mm-hmm. And did we see the adults flying around?
Yes, I think they were out getting food, and it was really cool.
Yeah, it was. We were, I think we were up by the community center where those big nest boxes are.
Yes, and, yeah.
And the owls were circling over us. And that is usually in the spring. And when the owls are nesting and raising their young. And then in the
in the warm summer evenings are when it's just awesome to go down to the wetlands and look for beavers and frogs and everything else. You've had a lot of cool adventures in the park, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I love it there.
Yeah, me too.
And I have really enjoyed exploring it with you and with all the other nature campers. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about an adventure you had at Magnuson?
Well, not really. But I do remember that even without seeing any wildlife, it's really cool to just go there and see all the nature there and, well, also the birds, and just sit there and look around.
I agree. Every day is a good day when you're out in nature, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for being my special guest. It has been so much fun catching up with you and hearing your ideas and adventures. I really appreciate it, Carla, and I hope to see you soon.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Another animal you might see on a walk in the Magnuson Wetlands in the evening is a rabbit. Now, if you were at the wetlands 2 or 3 years ago and went for a nighttime walk, you probably wouldn't see any rabbits. In fact, there weren't really any rabbits anywhere in Magnuson Park. But now, they're a very common sight, especially at dusk, the time of day when it's just starting to get dark. If you see a rabbit in the park, there's a good chance that it'll freeze when it sees you. Staying perfectly still for a long time and watching you. Then it might even warn other rabbits with powerful thumps on the ground with its hind legs. When a rabbit thinks there's danger, they'll hop away in a zigzag motion in case you're a predator that might chase them. And their large hind legs have very strong muscles, so they will disappear very fast into the bushes. Rabbits run on their toes, and they don't have paw pads on their feet like dogs and cats and other animals. Instead, they have coarse, compressed hairs that protects all their toes, which are also webbed, so their toes do not spread when they're hopping, which gives them more power with every jump. Don't ever try to pick up a wild rabbit, because they can use those hind legs to kick very hard, and their strong teeth to bite. They have very strong toenails also on their feet that help them dig when they're digging their burrows in the ground, but then also help them defend themselves too. Their ears are also amazing. They can detect predators from far away, and their shape can even help the rabbit maintain its body temperature. In a colder climate, like Seattle, rabbits usually have shorter ears, so they don't lose too much body heat. And in hotter climates, they have longer ears that help them shed extra body heat. Their ear muscles also help them maintain their balance when they're hopping away from predators. There's a few things I think you'll find interesting about their eyes, too, because their eyes are positioned very high on their head. That gives them the ability to see almost all the way around themselves without moving their head. Their field of vision is almost 360 degrees. Rabbits also sometimes sleep with their eyes open, so that a sudden movement will awaken them to respond to possible danger. I don't know how they do that. Have you ever read a story that had a rabbit in it? Like Brer Rabbit, Bugs Bunny, Alice in Wonderland, Watership Down, Rabbit Hill, or Peter Rabbit stories? Rabbits are pretty darn cool. Another thing we think of whenever we think of October and Halloween are pumpkins. Did you know that pumpkins are members of the squash family? The same family of cucumbers, zucchini, spaghetti squash, acorn squash, and lots of others? Squash plants originated in North America, and the oldest evidence ever found were seeds found in Mexico that were from between 7,000 BC and 5,500 BC. That's a long time ago. Pumpkins are now grown all over the world. In fact, of the 7 continents on planet Earth, Antarctica is the only continent that they can't grow on. They're one of the most popular crops in the United States, and 1.5 billion pounds of pumpkins are grown every year. The world's record for the heaviest pumpkin ever grown is 2,624.6 pounds that came from a pumpkin contest in Belgium in 2016. That's a big pumpkin. All pumpkins are high in vitamins, too. They have beta-carotene and vitamin A and a lot of vitamin C, too. I bet you've eaten more than one part of a pumpkin. Because here in the United States, we bake it for pumpkin pie, and we roast the seeds to eat for a snack. But people have also found ways to eat pumpkin all over the world. In the southwest United States and Mexico, pumpkin flowers are dipped in batter and fried in oil or used as a garnish on other foods. In the Middle East, pumpkin is used for sweet dishes such as halawa yakin. In India, pumpkin is cooked with butter, sugar, and spices in a dish called kadu kahawa. In China, the leaves of the pumpkin plant are used as a cooked vegetable or in soups. In Australia and New Zealand, pumpkin is often roasted along with other vegetables. And in Japan, pumpkins are served in yummy dishes, including tempura. In Myanmar, pumpkins are used in cooking and candied pumpkins are served for dessert. In Thailand, they make dessert from pumpkins by steaming them with custard inside. In Vietnam, pumpkins are cooked in soups with pork or shrimp. In Italy, pumpkin is used with cheese as a savory stuffing for ravioli. Pumpkin leaves are also eaten in Korea and used in kimchi. Pumpkin leaves are also a popular vegetable in Kenya and in Zambia, where they are boiled and cooked with peanut paste. In some parts of the world, pumpkins are used as medicine too. Wow, that's a lot of ways to eat pumpkin. In North America, pumpkins are also carved into jack-o'-lanterns for decorating around our houses at Halloween. But we're not the ones that invented this tradition. It came from Britain and Ireland, where they have a long tradition of carving lanterns out of vegetables, especially by carving big turnips. In 1837, the word jack-o'-lantern first appeared in writing for a carved vegetable lantern. In 1866 was the first time a carved pumpkin lantern for Halloween was ever written about, and the legend that a jack-o'-lantern can scare off imaginary monsters. I like carving jack-o'-lanterns that are silly looking or that look like a space alien. What kind of jack-o'-lantern do you want to carve this year? Here in the United States, the traditional type of pumpkin used for carving jack-o'-lanterns is called the Connecticut Field Pumpkin. They're nice and round, and when you hollow out the seeds inside, they're plenty big enough to hold a candle or a flashlight, and they last a long time, even after they're carved. Farmers worked hard to find a pumpkin to grow that would make a really good jack-o'-lantern, and the Connecticut Field Pumpkin is the best one. Right now, I bet that's the kind of pumpkin stacked in big piles outside your grocery store. Another funny thing people like to do with pumpkins is something called pumpkin chunking. Have you ever heard of that? Pumpkin chunking is a competition where teams build big mechanical devices that are designed to throw a pumpkin as far as possible. And the team whose pumpkin flies the farthest is who wins. They make catapults and air cannons and other amazing machines to throw those pumpkins. Some pumpkin chunkers even grow special varieties of pumpkin that they make as tough as possible, so to improve the pumpkin's chances of surviving a long throw and still being unbroken. Pretty darn amazing. I think I like pumpkins any old time of the year, but I'd rather eat them than throw them. How about you? Hope to see you there.